You take Microsoft, Amazon, Nvidia, Tesla, and Alphabet, just those five, and you look at their price to free cash flow right now is still 50 times. They still trade in aggregate 50 times their free cash flow. That might be okay in a 0% interest rate environment, but if we're going to be in a 3, 4, 5% interest rate environment going forward, that's a high, that's enough of a higher discount rate that that price to free cash flow, I mean, where should they trade? They 20, 25 times free cash flow. In that case, then they're still 100% overvalued and need to, come down 50%. That's the potential risk that I'm talking about.
Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart. Thanks for joining us for part two of our interview with macro researcher Jesse Felder. If you haven't yet watched part one of this discussion with Jesse, in which he explains why he sees a bad recession and a market correction by mid-year, head over to our channel at youtube.com/Wealthion and watch it there first. It sets the context for the investment themes we discuss in this video. And Jesse's also kindly shared his forecasts on which assets he thinks will weather the coming turbulence the best. So be sure to stick around to see that. All right, let's get started watching part two of our interview with Jesse Felder. What do you expect the markets to do over the rest of this year?
Over the rest of this year, I think we are, classically markets, rally into the spring, right? It's the, sell in May and go away is the classic, right, adage. You typically see tax loss selling into year end. You see a rally into the spring and then sell off into, if you just look at stock market seasonals, a sell off into, typically an October low, right? How many stock market bear market bottoms have come in October? I don't know, but it feels like an important time. So I think we're probably, I don't know when we top here. I do think, you mentioned S&P 4000. To me, it's that 41 to 4200 range is probably the top of this rally.
That's the kiss.
Yeah, that is the kiss. The 4150 ish is that's been a very clear level. It's even clearer on the NYSE composite. If you look at 16,000 on the NYSE composite, it's clear as day.
Sorry to interrupt, but I'm going to put up a chart that you put up recently of the NASDAQ that shows that the title of your article was "The Massive Momentum Structure in the Stock Market is Breaking Down."
Yeah.
So is there anything you want to say about these key charts? Because they do seem, sure, to corroborate what you're saying, which is that what's been powering the relatively recent rally seems to be tapering off here.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out, because the momentum picture in the NASDAQ mirrors that cash flow picture, right? We saw this period of cash flow growth at these big tech stocks between 10 and 20, 0 and 20% for the last 10 years. It broke down. We're down negative 25% in cash flow growth. Momentum in these stocks has done the exact same thing, where you look at the price of the NASDAQ composite or the NASDAQ 100 relative to its 36-month moving average, it shows a very clear range, a bull market range, where we were, above the 0% line or whatever it is for a long period of time. We had a blow off top where we went to a record high in momentum, and then we broke down below all those support levels last year. Now we're rallying up to basically test that support from below. That's, the longest good night. And that momentum picture and the fundamental picture are screaming, something dramatic has changed for these companies. Pay attention. And so I do think, yes, it's very important to be underweight a lot of these companies. I think that they are not only feeling the reversal of that demand pull forward and now demand vacuum, but we're also seeing the maybe a structural loss in business for these companies as zombies companies go away, through bankruptcies and things. The startup ecosystem is, dramatically damaged. And so I think we're going to see, momentum and fundamentals, the cash flow are pointing to the fact that the halcyon days are behind us. And what comes next is something a lot less bullish.
Okay. And when you think of something a lot less bullish, do you anticipate that it could be a return of the bear where, you know, we get some pretty big downdrafts? Or do you see it more almost kind of like last year, where it's just sort of this slow grind down throughout the year?
Well, you know, bear markets, famously, the second half of bear markets are more dramatic, more painful, more violent than the first half.
Because that's where you see the capitulation that we...
Yes, yeah. Yes, absolutely. You look at, you know, 2008 was famous, right? We saw, you know, the second half of that bear market was an out-and-out crash. And I don't think, like I said, we're going to have another financial crisis. And so we're not going to see that type of volatility. But you look at the 73, 74 bear market, 73 was very similar to 2022, where you just kind of had this, you know, pattern of lower highs and lower lows. 74 was when, you know, the market went, oh, okay, recession is here. You know, earnings are going to go in the toilet. It's really time to liquidate.
Right. It's the difference of the speed wobble to your front wheel coming off.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's kind of what we're headed towards, is a more, you know, capitulatory liquidation in markets. And you know, when I say things are not going to be as bullish for these stocks, I take the top five big tech stocks. You take Microsoft, Amazon, Nvidia, Tesla, and Alphabet, just those five. And you look at their price to free cash flow right now is still 50 times. They still trade in aggregate 50 times their free cash flow. That might be okay in a 0% interest rate environment. But if we're going to be in a 3, 4, 5% interest rate environment going forward, that's enough of a higher discount rate that price to free cash flow. I mean, where should they trade? They 20, 25 times free cash flow. In that case, then they're still 50, you know, 100% overvalued and need to, you know, come down 50%. That's the potential risk that I'm talking about in these big tech stocks. If they're not growing anymore, or their growth is dramatically reduced, and the discount rate you apply to their cash flows is, you know, sustainably going higher, you know, the valuations need to come down in a significant way.
Okay. Wow. And you know, because those stocks make up 50% of the NASDAQ, 125% of the S&P 100, I think you said, not 500.
No, it's the S&P 500.
Yeah. It's the S&P 500. Okay, yeah. 25% of the S&P 500. You know, those indices can't escape massive hemorrhaging if those eight stocks were to get cut in half.
Yeah. And conversely, I think it's fascinating, you know, that like, you know, the energy sector trades at its cheapest price to cash flow in history right now. Right. It's the only place where I still see insider buying. Just today, insiders at Devon Energy, ConocoPhillips stepping in to buy stock. Najat Sehun, who's at the University of Michigan, has done the best insider buying and selling research that I've seen. And he says the most bearish thing that you can see is insiders selling into declining prices, right? Like Elon did last year, right? That's the most bearish type of insider activity you can find. Conversely, the most bullish you can think is insiders buying as prices are going higher. So energy insiders were buying massively in 2020, right? But the fact that they're still buying today at higher prices, I mean, I think Devon Energy hit like, you know, $5 in 2020, and it's 50 today, and they're still buying, is very, very bullish. The fact that the energy sector as a percentage of the S&P 500 is still lower than it was at the previous down cycle, right? In 2000, 2001, energy bottomed at 5.5% of the S&P 500 or something like that. Today, we're still only at like 5.25%, right? After the incredible run energy's had, it's still a smaller percentage of the S&P 500 than it was in 2001 at that major low. Tells me that this secular bull market for stuff, for real assets, for commodities, for energy, still has a long way to go.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. So it sounds like you're seeing in general, the markets are going to have a bruising year ahead of them here. But there, it sounds like there are some sectors, sounds like mostly commodity driven, that you think have good, I'll call a set of midterm plus outlooks. So from an allocation standpoint right now, and this isn't personal financial advice, but Is it does it make sense to be sort of dollar cost averaging into these things or taking positions now? Or would you think that everything's going to get caught in the bear downdraft, but then when the dust settles, step into these areas?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, we're all, subject to recency bias. And the great financial crisis was painful for everybody. I don't care if you're a value investor or whatever. Everything, if you own financials or you own tech stocks, everything got crushed together. Gold prices got hammered in 2008, right? Everything got crushed at the same time. That's what happens in a liquidity, squeeze nightmare situation. Not every bear market works that way, right? I think we saw that last year where energy did phenomenally well, while non-profitable tech stocks did phenomenally terrible, right? Down 90% plus. To me, this feels a lot more like that 2001-2 bear market where you had, tech stocks get destroyed, right? You had, Sun Microsystems go from being the most popular stock in the market down 95% in a couple of years. At the same time, you could buy into the old bricks and mortar companies that had been left for dead at four, five, six times earnings, and they did phenomenally well. That doesn't mean there aren't periods where there's downdrafts where everything does go down together. But it just points out that I think over a 2 year period, you see more of a rotation than everything goes down at the same time. And I think we're in that more of kind of a rotation environment where, yeah, they're going to be, and especially if we go in recession, I mean, energy is vulnerable, right? We have oil supplies have recovered nicely. The natural gas price has tanked. And if demand, drops due to recession, there's potentially short-term downside for a lot of these energy stocks. But over a multi-year period, I think that they're going to do really well, and they trade at valuations today that make them very attractive. So I think we're in, to long story short, we're in this more of kind of a rotation type of environment than a crash type of environment.
Okay, which would mean that it, on a relative basis, safer to be dollar cost averaging into some of these sectors if you don't have much exposure into them yet, as opposed to just sitting on the sidelines waiting for a, cross all sector crash.
Yeah, I think that worked in 2008, but also 2008, I think you have to remember, was a very deflationary type of episode. And today, you can sit in cash and earn, 4 or 5%, which is, wonderful. But if the Fed does respond by lowering interest rates again, you could lose that cash flow on cash. And if inflation remains elevated, cash is not a wonderful option
Long-term
either.
place to be either. So that capital's got to go somewhere, right? So you want to be.
Yeah, and I do think to bring it back to that potential for a crack up boom, if we do see Fed lower interest rates, inflation takes off even bigger down the road, and you're sitting in cash, that could be a very painful experience too.
And I guess on that, and I know we're talking about stuff that's quarters out and it's all probabilities. So again, Jesse, we'll have you back on anytime you want to come back on to update your outlook. If the Fed's hand is forced, what magnitude do you expect their rescue efforts to be at? Is it going to be like at kind of what we saw in the pandemic? Are we talking about trillions in stimulus pumped in and 100 basis point at a time rate cuts, that type of stuff?
In the latest Grant's Interested Observer, Tom Hoenig, said that the fact that they downshifted to 25 basis points clearly suggests that they are leaning towards easing, towards reversing, and the market's probably interpreted that correctly. But as you pointed out, that's not necessarily bullish. Jay Powell himself told us, a few months ago, he said, "Look, if we do over-tighten, and get recession, we can use our tools, which are powerful,"
Right. He's like, "I know how to deal with that."
which is a very clear, sign that they're more than willing to, if we go back in the recession, to lower interest rates dramatically, print a bunch of money once again. And I think they might have to do that. Just, based on the potential problems with not doing it, political problems, and then also problems in the credit markets and things. I mean, you imagine when you keep monetary policy so loose for so long, you're storing up trouble, right? You can't normalize interest rates without creating a very painful cycle afterwards. Some have compared this to, fire management, right? Right. We're not going to allow any fire at all into the forest for years and years and years. And it's going to build up tons of detritus and tons of, burnable material so that when a fire does hit, it's, absolutely devastating. And I think this is where we are with the economy today. Is the Fed has not allowed recession, has not allowed any of these cleansing processes to happen for so long, that to think that we can normalize interest rate policy and not have a problem is the height of over-optimism.
Agreed. And it's because of creating that environment and letting it persist for so long, everybody gets habituated to it, addicted to it. It becomes their reality. When you remove it, they go into withdrawal. We have all the issues that you're talking about. And then everybody is begging you to switch course.
Right.
Right. So it'll be an easy decision for them in the sense that there will be zero political opposition to it. In fact, the politicians will probably have been screaming well in advance, as well as the public. Please do this. Right.
Yeah. And for years, I've suggested, for at least 3, 4, 5 years, I've suggested the Fed is going to be faced with the choice between the devil and the deep blue sea. The devil is the devil, which is another major asset price bust. All these zombie companies go bankrupt. You have a very painful credit cycle, right? That's the devil. Or you choose the deep blue sea, which is you continue to have bigger and bigger monetary response whenever that is threatened. And the deep blue sea is you allow for the possibility of runaway inflation. Right. And I think we're getting closer to that decision, with every cycle. I mean, but clearly during the pandemic, the Fed decided we'll print $5-6 trillion worth of new money and deal with inflation rather than allow a real credit cycle to happen. And so I think that's the game plan they've told us they're going to do. The fact that they changed the inflation target a couple of years ago from 2% to an average of 2%, we'd like to err on the high side, is telling us we want to err on the side of inflation. And so I think we need to take them at their word. Don't fight the Fed today means they're going to err on the side of allowing inflation to potentially get out of hand.
Right. And of course, by continually choosing the deep blue sea, you eventually risk currency destruction, right?
Right. And these are the risks that we need to keep in mind. And so when you say, I want to avoid this bear market by sitting in currency, sitting in dollars, you need to be aware of this other risk that's out there of the Fed potentially. Yeah.
Right. And to make it more complicated is everybody else is doing their own version of the same thing too. So it's not like there's an easy currency to go hang out in that's not doing all this stuff. But as you've talked about, hard assets are sort of one way to do that, right? And that's one of the reasons why you like commodities. Hey, real quick. So for your outlook, I would think you would actually be pretty favorable on bonds right now, at least on sovereign bonds, because they are paying you something in the interim to wait. If we do have a recession that arrives in the timeline that you think, and so you'll get a safety trade into them that'll push up prices. And if the Fed does step in to rescue, eventually that's going to bring yields down. But in the short term, it'll bring yields down, and that'll send prices up as well, especially on the longer duration bonds here. So I'm just curious, what's your outlook on bonds?
Absolutely. For a trade, I really like bonds, long-term bonds. Warren Buffett famously and Stan Druckenmiller made most of his money trading treasury futures into episodes like this. Made all of his money on central bank mistakes, is as he's put it, which is, when we're heading into a recession, load the boat on treasuries. Warren Buffett used to buy zero coupon bonds. Druckenmiller would buy treasury futures. I think, as Rob Arnott has pointed out, we are going to get a big inflation head fake this year, where because inflation was so strong in the first half last year, makes the comparables difficult this year for the first half. It's going to make it appear that inflation is going to come way down in the first half. And then it's going to rebound significantly in the second half, just based on the comparables.
Year-over-year comparison.
Year-over-year comps. And so, if you pair that with recession, yes, you could have a really nice trade in treasuries. But then again, that would be, for me, the upside down, the reverse of the long kiss goodnight for treasuries. We've had this huge downtrend in interest rates, right? We broke out of this downtrend. A nice buying opportunity in treasuries right now, based on these inflation dynamics and recession, would see them rates come back down to test that breakout level. And that would be maybe an epic selling opportunity for bonds. I'm kind of getting two steps.
That's the quick peck on the cheek in the morning.
Exactly. I think that would be the kiss goodbye, where maybe we see, higher interest rates, for a long period of time. But I do like treasuries for a trade, longer term treasuries.
Okay. And I just to make sure people aren't taking bonds as a catch-all term here, I'm going to guess you have a pretty different opinion of most corporate bonds in the current environment.
Absolutely. I mean, spreads are way too low right now. You look at the, lending standards and things like that, and everything's tightening, right? Traditionally, spreads widen in that environment. They've actually narrowed. And so it's very much like the stock market rally. This narrowing in spreads, I think, is a wonderful opportunity to lighten up and transition from corporates to treasuries, because there's so many over-leveraged corporations out there, right, that have taken on massive amounts of debt to buy back stock, et cetera, over the last few years. When they're forced to refinance at higher interest rates, it's going to create problems. Spreads are going to widen, and you're going to get a much better buying opportunity in corporate bonds down the road if you're patient.
All right. Well, look, Jesse, as expected and as always, this has been just a fantastic conversation. Thanks for giving us so much of your time here and so many great insights and so many sort of specific opportunities to consider here. Where can folks go who, have enjoyed this conversation with you? Maybe it's the first time they're getting exposed to you. Where can they go to follow you and your work?
TheFelderReport.com is my website. I try and put up a blog post there once a week or a podcast, but I've been on podcast hiatus for a little while. And then on Twitter, I'm pretty active. It's at Jesse Felder. I just kind of try and share a bunch of my reading and charts and things that I find of interest there on Twitter.
All right. Well, as somebody who follows both very closely, I highly recommend that everybody else watching do the same. All right, Jesse, it's again, just been such a pleasure to have you on the program. Look forward to having you back on anytime you want to come back.
Always great to chat with you.
All right. Well, now is the time of the program where we bring in the lead partners from New Harbor Financial, one of the endorsed financial advisory firms by Wealthion. I'm joined, as usual, by Mike Preston and John Loder, who's freshly back from a great trip in the Caribbean. Guys, another phenomenal interview. Jesse is always just such a joy to interview. He just sort of, good, big mind, but kind of explains things in a way that just anybody can understand. And I sort of told him after I turned the recording off that I feel like with every guy that comes on the channel, every person that comes on the channel, I pick and choose parts of what they say that resonate with me to form my own personal opinion. With Jesse, it's like somebody just sort of reading my thoughts back to me, which makes me a little nervous from a confirmation bias standpoint. But anyways, let's hear what you guys took away from this. Mike, let's start with you.
I really enjoyed that, Adam. I've got a long page of notes that I've been reviewing. I love how Jesse communicates. He communicates very complicated concepts in a very straightforward way, easy to understand. He does a great job talking about it. He does a great job at the Felder Report. And I guess I'd just like to share a couple bullet points that I've written down here. Jesse points out rightly that leading indicators, the ones that we should be paying attention to, leading indicators are saying that we're seeing a slowdown. One big one that seems to be really ignored here is this inverted yield curve. A very inverted yield curve, close to 5% on the short end for Treasury bills. And below 4% or so on the 10-year bond. It's a historically extreme yield curve inversion. The market's ignoring it so far. I'm still amazed that the S&P is hanging out here at around 4,000 as we speak, with this amount of yield curve inversion and with Treasury bills yielding around 5% on a risk-free basis. We're back to complacency, I think. In the market, there was some mild panic back in October. I certainly wouldn't call it panic, but short-term indicators got oversold, a little bit of over bearish sentiment. You know, clearly we could have had a collapse right there. So you don't want to ever take these things as a contrary indicator and jump right in. But as it turned out, we had a big bounce from October until now when we've swung back into complacency again. And Jesse talks about how he thinks that's a dangerous attitude. We couldn't agree more. And you know, technicals, we talked about last week and the week before, had gotten actually pretty bullish. But in the last couple of days, we saw a pretty swift rollover. And a lot of those technical indicators are either broken or starting to become in danger of being broken. And so if we go down from here, another 100 to 200 points on the S&P below maybe 3850 or so, almost all of those indicators will be broken. A number of indicators that we're watching have flipped over to the bearish side. The NYSE bullish percent, for instance, just reversed yesterday into a sell signal, just one of many that we look at. So we've had a classic bear market rally the last few months, and Jesse says this is the long kiss goodbye. It can't stress enough that this top has been a long, drawn-out process. Started back in November of 21, January of 22 was the S&P top. So we're going on 14 or 15 months of a big rolling top. And that's not surprising given the length of the bubble and vertical blow-off that we had before then. But it's been said many times on Wall Street, the bigger the top, the bigger the drop, it bears watching and it bears caution, particularly in the backdrop of the extreme fundamental macro data we see, most importantly, valuations. Valuations are easily double what they would need to be to have long-term average valuations, but that wouldn't even get us to average. Average might be somewhere around 1,800, 1,900 on the S&P. And of course, that doesn't even take into account the possibility of overshoot. Now, none of this has mattered, right? Because we've only talked about the Fed. 90% of the time, we're talking about the Fed. And Jesse talked about the Fed here, too. He said that Powell should just basically get it over with and hike rates faster than he thinks he needs to, because they need the ammunition to bail out the market and the economy after the inevitable crash. It's kind of the way we see it, too. That's what should happen. What is happening in the market is this return to complacency in this almost Pavlovian expectation of a Fed pivot, which we don't think is going to happen, or certainly won't happen until we see much lower prices in the S&P. The charts say that we could have a quick trip down to about 3,200 on the S&P, particularly if we roll over here. That's a good 20% below here. That might get people thinking that there's going to be a pivot, but who knows? We could overshoot below that, go to the high twos on the S&P. Before we get a pivot, I would not be betting on a Fed pivot here. And it seems like Jesse agrees with that. He thinks the Fed has to raise rates probably faster than they even want to, create a recession that's similar to 1974, 1975. That would clear the decks for them to be able to do more stimulus. I don't think they should. I frankly think they should step back out of the market and let the market become a free market again. But that's probably not going to happen, until they're forced to. And how would they be forced to? Probably a giant economic crisis that would get people sick and tired of these cycles and have people asking, well, what caused this? You know, maybe that's when a moment of justice would come. I don't know. He talked a lot more about other things, some investment ideas. I guess just one that jumped out at me is he likes high quality, long-term U.S. bonds. We do too. They're being sold off again this week and last. And so if you look at TLT, it's down around 100 again. If we do go into a recession, if the S&P does crack hard to the downside, there's going to be a flight to safety. And I think people and investors are going to be trying to nail down long-term interest rates. And that could send something like TLT, as an example, much higher over the intermediate term. So he likes long-term U.S. high-quality bonds for a trade. We do too. I guess I'll pause there and let you have a chance to talk, and John too.
Okay. Well, look, I'll hand it over to John. I do want to note, that was a great recap, Mike, and I do want to note, connect what you were saying about where the markets are right now. We've been talking for the past bunch of weeks about how the market has just not been listening to the Fed, right? Or at least it's been twisting the Fed's words to hear what it wants to hear. And of course, as we've been mapping the bullish market action to all this bearish, you know, market data. And Jesse added a few new ones with those leading indicators that he mentioned, the composite and then the corporate insider sell buy ratios. There's a huge mismatch between the euphoria we've seen in the markets and the data. And we're now beginning to see, you know, we've been wondering, okay, how is this going to resolve? And I think we've been leaning towards the bias of the market eventually is going to have to wake up to the fact that it's been thinking too magically, and it's going to have to start repricing things downwards. Now, we had Sven Henrich, noted technical analyst, on the program last week, and he basically outlined this battle zone for control that he said that bulls and bears were currently locked in, which was sort of this range between 3950 on the bottom and 4100 or so on the top. And he said, look, you know, what could happen is the market could drift down. And when it gets to 4000, it's going to be a really important moment. It's either going to bounce off of that, and that 4000, which used to be a resistance when the S&P was lower, will then turn into support. And if it does, then the markets could rally. And he says, if they do, that's a green light technically for the S&P to race up to 4,300, 4,400, right? Which would be about a 10% increase from where we are right now. He said, but if it breaks below 3,950, then there's really not a lot technically to keep it from dropping down to 3,232, which is sort of the 3,200 range that you had mentioned there, Mike. That's about a 20% drop. Well, here we are, you know, that since Sven's been on, the S&P has come down. We're now literally dancing around the 4,000 level. Market's broken below it this morning. It's now back above it as we're talking here. But we are at that key moment in the battle zone for control, trying to figure out, is it going to be support or is it going to be a trap door? I'm guessing we may not have too long to find out. So it'll be very interesting on this program next week, when we'll revisit the data and hopefully kind of have a stronger sense of which of Sven's two outcomes seems to be playing out. All right, John, handing it over to you. I'm sorry to force your brain to get out of vacation mode and have to actually think about macro data here. But anything else you would add to Mike's key takeaways from the Jesse discussion?
Well, what an abrupt return it is, and happy to be back, but was happy to be away. You know, I had to chuckle. One of the terms that seemed to come out of creation while I was away was the notion of a no landing. I read that with great joy and humor, that we seem to have an unending pool of phraseologies, slogans, so to speak, that seem to capture headlines. And I really appreciated Jesse talking about how it's classic for analysts and talking heads, Fed folks, to talk about soft landings, taking victory laps before the real pain has kind of taken foot in the economy, given some of these leading indicators. So I kind of just rub my eyes, this concept of no landing. I'm glad he kind of called out the this time is different. It's always talk about a soft landing just before it's seemingly about to get a lot worse. I thought it might be good to kind of just put to life some of the long kiss goodbye that he talked about. And to do that, I want to just kind of share a screen, if you would enable me, Adam.
There you go.
All right. So I'm going to pull a chart in front of the screen here. All right. So this is a chart of the S&P 500 on a weekly basis, right up through current. So this peak here was basically the beginning of 2022. Each one of these bars is a week. These candles is a week. The green and reds. You'll see here that basically last year was all about essentially a downtrend here, that every time the market kind of reached that downtrend, it was kind of the long kiss goodbye, so to speak, on a shorter term basis. There was a notable breakthrough so far this year that, from a pure technical standpoint might be viewed as bullish, but there's plenty of examples in history where you might call this a head fake. And in fact, I wanted to kind of go back and look at some of the longer terms. He referred to the 1973-74 period as perhaps an analog. And so if you look here, this market peak in 73 here was a pretty slow and steady decline, like we saw perhaps last year. There was a head fake here. This line here is a 50 week moving average, by the way. You can see, basically a bunch of times it kissed that, broke through here, sold off, kissed it again. And one thing that jumps out here is this notion that in many bear markets, the real pain doesn't usually happen until the last third, for example. So this is about a 50% decline peak to trough, and about half of that happened in this kind of last third. I'll fast forward, not to belabor the point here.
But hey, and real quick before you do, just go back there for one sec.
Sure thing.
Put your cursor around May. June.
June of
right there. And these are weeks we're looking at, or
These are weeks.
All right. So that's 12 down weeks from basically June to the bottom there.
Which was October.
Yeah. And precious few green weeks. So just want to underscore your point there, John, which is when this thing really cascades down in that last third or whatever, or last quarter, they generally tend to be pretty violent, right? I mean, it's just, there's not a lot of turbulence or back and forth. It's just usually kind of like a stone dropping.
Yep. So, you know, I don't have to belabor the point here, but that I thought was just, you know, a helpful way to kind of put into pictures the long kiss goodbye that Jesse refers to. It's a fairly common pattern that you see in new bear markets, which we think we likely are in. We still are at valuations that are stratospheric. One of our most esteemed analysts that Mike and I follow, John Hussman, put out his monthly report this week. It's a must read for anybody that really wants to look at data. You know, some great data points in there that investors should take heed of, we believe. Folks like Morgan Stanley have even become very bearish. They've pointed out that the equity risk premium, which is not necessarily an indicator that we put a huge amount of stock in, it's basically a measure of the added return potential being priced into the stock market compared to U.S. Treasury bonds. It's at its thinnest level, meaning you're getting paid the least amount of incremental return for taking on the stock market risk relative to Treasury bonds since about 2007. So you have even mainstream firms, you know, starting to really call some warnings.
Yeah, and can we talk about that just for a second? So I noted last night that the U.S. Treasury 1 year is now yielding over 5%.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, there is an alternative. We've been trained for most of the last decade that there is no alternative, and you need to be in stocks and real estate and anything but cash, anything but deposits, anything but safety. That's no longer the case. And, you know, the market is actually pricing in a pretty, you know, I think there's a 25% market pricing in that's going to be 4 more rate hikes this year, even though just a month ago, everybody was talking about pausing pivots, right? This is, and I'm glad Jesse reminded us that, you know, and Druckenmiller, I think, has often pointed this out. The Fed has never been able to get inflation back to target levels without at least the federal funds rate exceeding for some period of time the headline CPI inflation rate. That registered at 6.4%. We're still sub 5% on the federal funds rate, or 5%-ish. So there's still conceivably another percentage point or so to go in federal funds rate, even just to kind of meet that criteria, which is a very loose one. The Taylor rule would have you at interest rates closer to I think 9 or 10%. So a lot of wishful thinking about this no landing, soft landing. The Fed is about to pivot, in our opinion.
Well, absolutely. And kind of where I'm going with this is look, if you're watching the action here and you're saying, I'm not feeling super optimistic about where the markets could head in 2023, right? I'm open to being wrong, but I'm feeling nervous enough that I don't want to be just like going super long, you know, and going up the risk curve. Well, now you do have an alternative, right? In past decade, you didn't, right? You'd sit in cash and get nothing for it, right? And even with low reported inflation, you were still getting a negative real return from the 0.06%, say, that like your bank would be paying you on that cash, right? And, you know, T-bills were paying very little as well. But now what you can do is you can, I'm not recommending that folks do exactly this, but you can just put your money in 1 year T-bills, right? And you can get a risk-free 5% on that, right? So you know you're going to get 5% coupons along the way. And if it tends to be a rocky year in the market, well, then you're protected, right? You're just watching it from the sidelines, getting paid the whole way. If indeed the Fed does pivot, let's say the pivot Posse is correct, right? And something breaks and the Fed is forced to pivot. Well, then, you know, the value of your bond is going to go up, right? So you're going to be getting those payments and you're going to be getting a capital return, capital gain on your bond itself. And let's say worst case scenario, you're wrong, right? Let's say it's actually a good year in the markets, right? Or let's say it's a bad year where rates are going up, right? And so the price of the bond is going down in the open market. No big deal. You just hold it for a year. You get 100% of your principal returned to you at the end. Like, it is one of the best risk return instruments that I can kind of see out there right now. So Mike, we'll come to you in a sec, but John, I'll let you comment on that real quick before we go to Mike.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this is where it gets right down to people's individual situations. I've had plenty of conversations just in recent days with folks that are looking to possibly be able to buy some real estate in hopes that real estate prices are coming down. And it's not uncommon for them to think about a year or 2 year horizon. And to those folks, I say, don't even think about trying to invest that money that you have earmarked for a house in anything other than something like that. I mean, that's a guaranteed and it's liquid, right? Don't even think about the money you need in that kind of time frame to be putting into riskier things on the belief that you're likely going to end up better. That doesn't mean you can't possibly end up better, but it's not a very wise wager in our very strong opinion.
All right, got it. So Mike, I'll let you chime in. And are you guys at New Harbor looking at your portfolio and saying we want bonds to be more or less represented given what's going on here?
We're pretty happy where we are. We're about 15% in long-term bonds. I mean, there's always a risk that we're wrong and that interest rates go higher first and long-term bonds go down more. But a few months ago, we saw what looked like a capitulation in long-term bonds. If you look at a chart of TLT, it reached the low 90s. It then bounced to maybe 110, and now it seems to be coming back to 100. Maybe it's a kiss goodbye in the opposite direction, like I think Jesse said. So we're pretty happy there. We've got a what often is called a barbell approach, really heavy on the short end with treasury bills, close to almost 40% or so there. And in the long end, around 15%. I don't really think we want to venture too much more into the long bond. But for people that have just T-bills, it, like John said, it's a good thing to do to sit and park and wait and see what happens in the market. You might want to nibble on the long end. You could buy the 10-year bond, or you could buy any one of the ETFs that own long-term U.S. bonds. But we're pretty happy where we are.
Can I interrupt you on that just for this is an important point you're making. If you think the Fed is going to break something and eventually have to pivot, right? Which I think there are a lot of people, a lot of the experts I've talked on this channel, they think that that's inevitable at some point. Right. You know, the market clearly thought the Fed was going to pivot tomorrow and is now having to reevaluate that. But I think a lot of the analysts we talk to, they just say, look, the economy is so over leveraged at this point in time that it just can't sustain 5% interest rates. And if the Fed keeps hiking even higher than that, it just increases the odds even more. Right. And we've talked about the lag effect where the economy hasn't even felt the full force yet of most of the rate hikes that have been made over the past year, right? They're gonna start slamming into the economy month after month going forward from here for the next couple quarters, right? So if you're of the mindset that the Fed is over tightening or maybe has already over tightened and at some point it's going to have to pivot, when it does, presumably the long end of the U.S. Treasury bond curve should react the most price-wise. Right. In terms of as interest rates come down, bond prices go up. That's the inverse relationship between interest rates and bond prices. And that effect is greatest the further out you are in terms of duration. Right. So the long bond should slingshot. So there's a lot of examples of great investors, Warren Buffett included, who have made a good chunk of their money by betting on bonds at turns in the interest rates like this. I read that Warren Buffett actually was buying zero coupon bonds. That they really experience this, right?
Even more leverage, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so is this potentially one of those moments sort of in investing history where there's a slingshot coming and that, you know, if you position yourself to take advantage of it, you could make a fair amount of money. And of course, nothing is guaranteed here in this environment, but you know, we haven't seen interest rates, we haven't seen yields this high on treasuries in forever. I think there's an increasing risk that the Fed is going to break something and it's going to be forced to bring yields down. So it does sort of say, hey, this is kind of a relatively rare moment where the probabilities are kind of aligning of a slingshot event. And maybe you do want to have some of your more speculative or at least more risk-oriented part of your portfolio positioned for this. And what's kind of nice about this is, yes, it's a risky bet, but worst case scenario, you just hold the bonds forever. And in 30 years, you get your principal back while you get paid.
Yeah, you stated it very well, Adam. All those trillions of dollars that are in the short-term treasury bills, they're either going to be maturing or they're going to be sold to chase longer term bonds the second that it's clear that there's some kind of Fed pivot, because these are historically better rates on the long end than we've seen in many years. We just lived through nearly 15 years of 0% interest rates around the world, and in some parts of the world negative. And the dollar is still very strong, probably will stay strong for a while, particularly if there's a flight to quality. And so if there's some kind of pivot and it becomes clear that the Fed has changed their regime, then yes, all those trillions of dollars are going to come out of the short end and they're going to try to nail down good rates on the long end. If I knew that was going to happen for sure, clearly I'd be suggesting putting all of your money in the long end. But it's just too risky because nobody knows the future. But clearly there's a very good opportunity here for some kind of slingshot effect like you talked about. Long bonds could go up 20 or 30% under that kind of change, and they could do so pretty quickly. And as you point out, you're getting paid nearly 4% to wait. You know, even if bonds went lower, for example, looking at TLT or something similar, I mean, it could drift lower. It's absolutely true. It could take a lot longer for this to happen. But in the meantime, you're getting paid between 3 and 4%. It might even, I don't know the exact yield, but it's between 3 and 4%. And then ultimately, you could see a gain. And it could be a large gain if the market reaction is large enough. So, yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense to nibble on the long end, too. Even the 10-year bond for people that are buying treasuries directly at Treasury Direct and probably putting almost all of their money into short-term treasury bills, like 6 months and then rolling them all the time. We talk to a lot of people like that. We're advising them to maybe buy 10% or 15% in the 10-year bond. A 10-year bond is a good compromise. It's not too long, but you should also get a pretty good pop on that if we're right about the slingshot effect. A vehicle like TLT holds more like an average of 20-year bonds. And if you wanted to get super leverage, then you would use zero coupon bonds with a long maturity. I don't think that in general people have to take that kind of risk. But yeah, it's a good opportunity, particularly with equity so ridiculously overvalued, and having to fall at least 50% to get anywhere near normal valuations.
All right. Well, super interesting. The things are beginning to get interesting here, right? You know, the universe doesn't give you probability events like this all that often. And again, don't know exactly what's going to happen from here, and we'll be tracking this closely. But I did just want to flag for folks, this is something worth exploring if the logic we've laid out here is interesting to you. And if you are feeling like you don't understand bonds enough, or at least as much as you want to really have an informed opinion on what we're talking about here, I just want to flag for folks that a few months ago, we did a great sort of primer on understanding bonds with Michael Leibowitz of Real Investment Advice. And if you haven't watched that yet, go watch it for free. It's a great exposition on how to understand how, you know, bond math works and how to really understand bonds if you don't feel like you do well enough today. And if you want to go watch that, you can do that right after this video by going to wealthion.com/bonds. All right, guys. We will begin to wrap things up here for this week. Real quick, one other resource I want to direct folks to is the Wealthion Spring Conference, which is coming up now in just a couple of weeks. We have a few days left of the early bird pricing. The roster of faculty remains phenomenal. We're still adding one or two more folks to the list. But to learn more about the conference and register for it and lock in that early bird price, just go to wealthion.com/conference. And a reminder, if you can't watch live on the day of the conference, again, it's all online, which is Saturday, March 18th. Replay videos of the entire event will be sent to everybody who registers. So, you know, don't worry, you're not going to miss a thing. All right, John, in wrapping up here, I'll let you have the last word. I know you've been off, you know, clearing your mind and recharging your batteries, but I know you and the team at New Harbor are talking to people every single day right now. Any bits of parting advice given where we are in the current market cycle?
Well, I think it's really important to just kind of eyes wide open, let someone walk you through, if you're not in tune with the data, where the data tells us we likely are in the cycle of things. Don't be blinded by headlines about slogans like no landing and things like that. The financial media has a time-honored history of trying to misdirect and catch you to do the wrong thing. Always bring it back to the data and perspective of what history can tell us. And don't forget about the other things in your financial life. We've been spending a lot of time not only just doing portfolio reviews and helping folks reallocate to risk levels that are more appropriate for their goals, but doing things like retirement planning, Social Security strategizing. Many folks have assets that are trapped at old 401k plans that they've kind of lost touch with, that perhaps don't offer investment menu choices that are robust enough to kind of help clients really position into things that are likely to be okay places to be over this transitional period that we think we're in. These are all things that we routinely will help clients with, and as part of the comprehensive service that we work with clients in regards to their situations.
All right, great. And one thing we didn't, we talked about the risk to market prices right now. We didn't really talk about Jesse's, other big shoe that he thinks is going to drop this year, which is just a pretty bad recession, right? Which he said, as best he can guess right now, it's sort of mid-year, maybe fall. And to your point there, John, this sort of to fail to plan is to plan to fail adage, which is, now is the time to be doing all the game planning for, if a recession does hit, how do I want to be positioned beforehand so that I'm least vulnerable to it as possible? So yet another reason to meet with your professional financial advisor, have these discussions, come up with a plan, and give your advisor the marching orders for them to execute during this time period. As I say every week, folks, I think almost everybody watching this program, unless they are a super experienced individual investor, and I do not put myself in that category, I think should be working under the guidance of a professional financial advisor who understands all the issues that Jesse and I talked about and that Mike and John and I have been talking about here. If you've got a good one who can handle this for you, great. Literally stick with them. They are very hard to find. But if you don't have one or would like a second opinion from one who does, maybe even from John and Mike and their team there at New Harbor, just go schedule a free consultation with one of the financial advisors that Wealthion endorses. To do that, just go to wealthion.com, fill out the short form there. Only takes you a couple of seconds to fill out. These guys will sit down with you. They'll give you a personalized portfolio review. They'll tell you what they think you should do. You can do it yourself. You can tell your existing advisor you want them to follow those rules, or you can keep talking to these guys if you like them. But as a reminder, totally free, no strings attached. There's no commitment to work with these guys. They just offer it as a public service to help as many people as possible position prudently before what might actually arrive later on this year. All right, John and Mike, guys, as always, great week. Thanks so much for joining me. Whatever happens in the markets, like I said, we're in that key battle zone for control here, right at the 4,000 line right now. Hopefully we'll know which way it breaks by next week. So we'll be breaking that down for folks here. John and Mike, guys, thanks so much. Everybody else, thanks so much for watching, and see you next week.
Thank you, Adam. We'll see you next week.
Like usual, we enjoyed it. We'll see you soon. Thank you.
If you'd like to schedule a consultation with one of the financial advisors at New Harbor Financial, simply go to wealthion.com. These consultations are completely free and there are no strings attached. The good folks at New Harbor will simply answer any questions you have about your investment goals or your portfolio and give you their best advice given their latest market outlook. They're willing to do this because they care about protecting people's wealth and because Wealthion has connected them with so many thoughtful investors just like you over the past decade. We started doing this because so many people have approached us in frustration, looking for a solution because they're feeling out of alignment or downright ridiculed by the standard financial advisors who have been managing their money. You know the type. The kind that just pushes all of your money into the market, scoffs at the idea of owning gold, And when you bring up concerns about the market's sky-high valuations, they say, don't worry, the market will always take care of you. For many of the reasons discussed in today's video, we think this is one of the most challenging and treacherous times in history for investing. We strongly believe that today's investors are best served working in partnership with a conscientious professional financial advisor who understands the risks in play. Now, we're agnostic which professional advisor you work with, as long as they're good. If you're already working with one, that's fantastic. Stick with them. But if you don't, or are having trouble finding one you respect or trust, then consider talking to John and Mike and the team at New Harbor. Now, for those about to ask, yes, there's a business relationship between Wealthion and New Harbor, which we've put in place to make sure everything is handled according to SEC regulations. All the details on this are clearly provided on the Wealthion.com website. Also, it's important to note that New Harbor is able to work with U.S. citizens, green card holders, and those with existing assets in the USA. But for regulatory reasons, they aren't able to take on non-U.S. clients. All right, with all that said, if you'd like some insight and guidance on how to protect your wealth during this unprecedented time in the markets, go to Wealthion.com to schedule your free consultation with the good folks at New Harbor. Thanks for watching.